So I tried to come up with an interesting topic. I think I said, you know, why women hate Purim and men love it, and what's wrong. But the truth is that it came out of a remark that one of my friends made to me, that his wife was at a women's shiur, and the women basically, after the shiur, there everyone was kind of going off on like, Purim, it's going to be bad. It's always bad. It's just one big suffering after another. And, you know, men get drunk, and it's just hefker, and mishloach manon, and the kids in the costume. So I was like a little sobered, because, you know, I guess I've heard that sentiment, you know, being said. And so I'm like, I guess that sounds, you know, Purim is like such a good holiday. How could it be that, you know, that how could it be that people don't like Purim? So I decided to do a little bit of research. So I went online and I typed in "women hate Purim," and I found that there's a website. There's actually, it's not a website. It's okay. Too excited. It's actually a blog post. And there's a blog that was written by a woman, and she says, you know, I probably write this post every year, but I hate Purim. I hate it when everyone feels that all the boundaries are down. The kids are smoking, firecrackers are dangerous, my husband drinks until he goes nuts. I dread that. I hate the lack of Seder and the nuttiness of the whole day, writes this woman. And with all that, I have to go to the Megillah twice, take care of my kids, make a Suda, give all the Mishloach Manot. I'd much rather get to Pesach. Another comment from an anonymous poster is, I've always felt that Purim is a men's holiday. They get drunk, they rent limos, they go out collecting money, they dance, the women stay behind and take care of the kids, mishloach manot, meals, etc. I resent it very much. I wish there was something that we could do to change it. Just read one more just to kind of get us in the feeling. I would have to say I have a love-hate relationship with Purim, writes this next woman. I love Megillat Esther. It's one of my favorite books in Tanakh. I love hearing it read. I get the same thrill that I got as a child through my understanding of it has deepened. But in Ritz, so then she says, but we also have a great Purim Shmiel, which is on your Yishuv, must be Israeli. The next day I dread for all the reasons that you said, although my husband doesn't get drunk. Even the Megillah in the morning seems like overkill, and I'm on tenterhooks to race home and get all the last-minute things ready, to greet the early arrivers with Mishloach Manot, the constant traffic in and out of the house, the doorbell ringing, not having a minute of quiet the whole entire day, kids eating tons of junk. Did I mention that I'm creatively challenged? The entire Mishloach Manot is a bit stressful, although not my favorite cog. At least most of my kids are older, so they don't get dressed up anymore, so at least that's one less thing to deal with. Wow. So obviously Purim is like supposed to be a happy holiday. If this is where at least a section of our wives, our sisters, our mothers are hanging out, there's got to be something wrong. Something is wrong in Beantown. Because essentially Purim is supposed to be a Mishnechasar Arabim Simcha. Doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of Simcha going on. So I want to try to understand from a perspective, and I should mention, Jonathan got me into this, but this shiur is for Fua, for our friend Yitzchak, and Yitzchak ben Leah, right? And Shever Fua Shlema and Karov. So try to understand what exactly is this all about? Where have we gone wrong? First of all, let's just take a moment to think about, we mentioned this, why are the women getting this element? In other words, why are women feeling that the Purim is just like this big task? I mean, ostensibly, Pesach is much more difficult, right? Ostensibly. Clean the house, top to bottom, lots of work, tons of weeks. And I think the first thing I'd like to say is that there are also men who don't like Purim. I don't think it's only unique to women. I think there are men that feel some of the sentiment that I've read in these emails. Purim is a balagan, you know, everyone running around. I actually polled a few people in preparation for this year, and I got a little bit of that, like, tough, you know, like, we'll get it over with. And then the thing that really separates the men from the boys, or the men from the women, I don't know what the right thing to say is the Purim Suda. So there are people who love the Purim Suda, they wait for it all year. And ostensibly, that's the highlight of Purim. I mean, as it goes up and up until we get to the pinnacle. And then there are people that say, that's all downhill. It's all great until we get to the Purim Suda. I don't know what I'm doing there. Bunch of drunk idiots running around. What's the point of that? So we have to try to understand. So I want to read, and I think that what we're going to see, Bezrat Hashem, in the next couple of minutes, is mamash the pshat in the Megillah, and it has to do a lot with the wonderful series of shiurim that Rav Eli has been organizing about shovavim and about kedusha and about living the kedusha with our wives and what is that really all about. And so, in the few minutes that's left, hopefully we'll be able to get that. So let's read I'm going to read to you a little bit from a Torah from Rabbi Nachman, Torah Yud in Likutei Maharan. Rabbi Nachman's talking about the idea of Mordechai and Esther. So he says there's four players, so to speak: Haman, Mordechai, Esther, and Purim. Those are the four things. We have to understand what each of those things means, and we'll get an amazing insight into this. So he says that Haman, what was Haman? Haman was basically Avodah Zarah. Why? We know that Haman, he says this, Rabbi Nachman, I'm just reading it outside. He says, Haman made himself into an Avodah Zarah, as the Gemara Megillah says. And he basically felt like he was in control. He was the man. It was all about Haman. We know that the Gemara in Chulin says, where do we see Haman from the Torah? Everyone knows. It says, Min ha'etz. Right? What does that mean? Eitz Hadat. What was the essential sin of Eitz Hadat? Many different opinions. The Sabbath Navardak in Dregas Adam says very specifically, the sin of Eitz Hadat was Ana Emloch. It's about me. Adam Arishon decided that I want to eat because I, me, want something. When I want something, it becomes I'm worshiping myself. That was Haman. Haman was concerned about himself and only himself. We see in the Megillah, not even about his wife, not about his kids so much. Everything was there to misharet him. It says that Haman came in and he told about at Ishto, Verov, Banav, what were their purpose in life? To seem as window dressing for his goal of being the most important thing. Everyone else was only window dressing into his narrative. It was all about himself. That's Haman. Rabbi Nachman says, who is Be'etzim fighting against Haman, in addition to we're going to get to Mordechai and Esther? It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who was buried Mul Beit Peor, which we know was the place where we had the sin of Midian, where was the sin of Gilu Arayos. There's Moshe Rabbeinu was buried Mul Beit Peor. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, how do we call Moshe Rabbeinu? Eved Hashem. He was Kulo Mitbatel to Hashem. He was the one who took care, like a shepherd takes care of his flock. Why do we have that mashal of Moshe Rabbeinu carrying the sheep? Because Moshe was someone who cared about others in a way that we have no concept, which is why he was Anav Mikol Adam al Pnei Adama. So basically, Rabbi Nachman says, the opposite of Haman is Moshe Rabbeinu, who cared for other people, who was totally focused on the other person, about giving and about building people up. So then he says however, that wasn't complete until we get to Mordechai and Esther. And it's interesting. If you think about it, Purim is the only holiday where we really have a true feminine hero. Nachon, we have Miriam at Kriyas Yamsuf. Nachon, there is Yehudis, which we talk about on Hanukkah. But the bottom line is that we don't talk about Esther in a sense of codification. We read about Esther. It's a Tanakh book where we read during the holiday about Nachon. We read about Ruth, but she's mamash not. We don't remember Ruth. It's not part of our mitzvah. Esther and Mordechai. Esther and Mordechai. It's always Esther and Mordechai. It's those two duality of those two together that make the story. So Rabbi Nachman says that what does Mordechai represent? Very, very, this is the Gemara. The Gemara says in Chulin, what does Mordechai represent? Mar dror, says the Gemara. What is mar dror? What is the lashon of dror? Lashon of dror. So the lashon of dror is freedom, right? So Rabbi Nachman says, dror lashon cherut. For example, that Mordechai represents Cherut. What does that mean that Mordechai represents Cherut? The ability on Purim to feel free, to feel the koach of Mordechai, is basically why, in a nutshell, we see that Purim appeals to men. Bottom line is, a person feels in his life, in his day-to-day life, like there are a lot of things that are nagging and eating at him. People feel like my job, I got to support my family, I got all these mitzvos to do, I got to get up early in the morning, I got to go to minyan, I got to put on tzitzis, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to get kids, I got to get a job. And one time a year we say to you, throw away your watch. I want you to enjoy yourself and just let go. Be free. That's the koch of Mordechai. It's beautiful because it allows a person all of a sudden to really be true to themselves. To really just Who am I really? Without having to go through a fast of 24 hours like we have in Yom Kippur, where we really feel in the last few minutes of Ne'ilah free and clear. On Purim, says Rabbi Nachman, we feel free through the koach of Mordechai. Mordechai allows us mamash l'shachrer and be who we really are be'emet. What's the koach of Esther, says Rabbi Nachman? We know the koach of Esther is hastara, is hiddenness. One second. What's the point here? The koach of Mordechai is freedom. The koach of Esther is hiddenness. How does that come into it? Because it says, "Vayhi omena tadasa, kasher haita ba'amna itu," that they were be'amuna biyachad. They were working together. Esther, he says, is the koach of reality, of this world, of a koach who is mastir. We know that the woman is kol kvoda bat melech pnima. She is hidden. She is uncovered. And actually, if you think about the story of the Megillah, what is the tension in the Megillah all the time? Will we find out who Esther really is? The Esther lo meret, lo Esther ameret et malatavi atama, ki Mordechai tziva aleha shelo tagid. Mordechai told her, you need to be hidden. You need to be hidden. And where does the main tension in the Megillah come up? It comes in Perek Dalet, where basically Mordechai says, it's time to come out of from out hiding. And Esther says, I'm not sure that this is the right thing to do. She says, I don't want to come out of hiding. I'm comfortable where I am. I don't want to be, and there's a lot of different deep levels to this. We know that Mordechai and Esther, according to many opinions, were husband and wife. And the Gemara says that when Esther went to Ahasuerus, for that time, she gave up her ability to be with Mordechai because she basically came out of hiding, opened herself up to basically to the dark side, as it were, of the sexual experience she was going to have with Ahasuerus. And therefore, at that point, she lost her ability to be with Mordechai. But that tension, he says to her, "Im acharesh tacharishi be'et hazot." If you don't listen now, then you're going to be passed by. You need to come out of hiding now, and that's where you need to see your koach. What is this all about? How does this connect to the point? We see very clearly that the koach of a man and the koach of a woman are very different. The man's koach is to be mashpia, is to be influenced. is to be able to come out there and give to the world. So naturally, on Purim, when we drink and some of our barriers come down, what happens? Our true colors shine through. Hopefully, what we have inside of us, what we really believe is our essence, comes out on Purim, and it can be the most beautiful thing in the whole world. That, until now, we've understood. That was something yashan, nachon? That's what Purim is all about. But why? Where is the wife in all of this? Where is the Esther in this whole story? Why are the women complaining that they're being left with the shalach manos and the kids and the mess and the vomiting and all of this other stuff? Why is that? Because what's not happening? Because it's the job of the mashpia, of the husband, to bring the wife out in a way that she will be convinced that she can come out safely from hiding. Just like Esther in the Megillah was convinced to come out of hiding. How was she convinced to come out of hiding? What occurred? How did Mordechai convince her to come out of that secret place?
He said, we'll find someone else if you don't do it.
He said, we'll find someone else if you don't do it. But why did she...
Don't use that one.
Why did she come out of hiding? Kaisher haita ba'amna ito. Because she had belief that Mordechai was going to hold the air for her. He was going to serve as a landing pad for all of her feelings and difficulties and challenges, and that he was going to be able to listen to her and hold on to her hand in a way that made her feel safe and comfortable and loved. And now she realized, this is my tafkid, so I can open myself up and become vulnerable, and then I can come out of hiding. Now, what's not happening? What's not happening? What is the sentiment among these women that gets annoyed? They say, my husband goes off, he's having a good time with his buddies, I'm left with the kids. Doesn't mean that the husband needs to stay and be a lamlam, as they say. You know, lo mezik, lo meshiv. It doesn't have to be that way. What the husband needs to do is to be able to give his wife the sense that when he comes out of his hiding place, that she's going to be so proud of him. And that she's going to sense that what he's doing and what they're working on together is a joint project. I was just talking with someone this evening who's really struggling with the whole issue of Kedusha in his marriage, in life, and all of the things that are sucking us in from outside, the internet, the telephone, all of these things that are calling us to as Rabbi Nachman later says, basically the whole story of Amalek is the story of Gama Brit. It's the story of looking at all of the schmutz that we shouldn't be looking at. What's the problem there with all looking at all of the schmutz? What's the problem with going on the web and kind of washing your eyes out with some pretty pictures? Because basically at that moment, you're leaving your wife behind. You're saying, Ana Amloch, I want to enjoy. Just like the idea of Min Ha'etz, Hamin Ha'etz, it's the idea of Haman. That's a little Haman inside of all of us that says, Magia Lecha, you deserve to have a good time. You deserve to enjoy. Just go out there, it's fine, don't worry. You'll taste a little bit from the fruits of the vine. No big deal. And there's a woman inside, at home, that's feeling catastrophe at that moment. She's being left all alone. And what happens to her? She turns inward and becomes more closed and more unwilling to come out of her hiding place and more insecure. We're living in times when the husbands are going further out beyond the boundaries and the wives are closing in. We're seeing more and more. So many women feel like they have no room to breathe. They have no room to be who they want to be, because they're feeling that they have to hold on. You know, it says here, Rabbi Nachman says, "Ragla yordot mavet," that a woman's feet go down to the ground and she's almost grasping onto death. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that she's bad. It means that she's hanging on by her fingernails to keep the family together. She's hanging on to the children that they shouldn't go out and start doing all kinds of crazy things. She feels a tremendous amount of responsibility. She feels like the weight of the world is on her shoulders. That's what you're hearing from these women. They feel like the weight of the world is on her shoulders. Why? Because her husband is out doing his own thing. He's out enjoying life. He's out at work. He's out doing whatever. And he's not mityaches to her. And so she, on Purim, it's the worst time of the whole year. And anybody who feels bad about their inner self on Purim is miserable. Because there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to go. You're firmly faced with who you are, and you're embarrassed about that. What a tragedy. Every single Yid is an amazing neshama, is an unbelievable person. And every Yid has a wife who's an amazing person, and who needs to be made to feel by their husband like they're so precious, they're so amazing. And the only way to do this is with Shmirat HaBrit. So when we think about what we should be looking at, what we shouldn't be looking at, all of the halachic questions, a mixed speech, a not mixed speech, all of the things that was so adequately dealt with in the Shirim in the last couple of weeks, what is it all about? In other words, why? In other words, what's the big deal? So I shake a woman's hand at work. So I have a little extra conversation with my secretary. Or so, you know, the girl at work that we always work from next side to side together. You know, we talk about stuff and we have a friendship there. What's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? The problem is that a moment that boundary is opened, my wife turns inside and she closes down. She doesn't feel like she can open up. And Esther doesn't come out of her hiding place. And the Jewish people don't get saved. But we say, the whole Purim is v'nahafochu. We're going to be coming to Purim, mamash, in just a few days. On Purim, we get to Chatzot HaLaila, midnight on Purim. We know that the halacha says, kol poshet yad notnim lo. Anyone who holds out their hand, you have a mitzvah to give them on Purim. We say, the Sfarim HaKadoshim say that about every Jew on the night of Purim at Chatzot HaLaila can put out his hand and Hashem has to listen to him. He has to listen to him. The question is, what are we going to ask for? Are we going to ask for banai chayei mizonei? We're going to ask for more money, for more children, for more for our lives? Or are we going to say, Ribono Olamim, wow, give me a chance to allow my wife to open herself up, to feel comfortable enough with me, that she can be the person that she should be, so that Esther comes out of her hiding place. And like Esther said, Tichtevuni Ledoros, Tichtevuni Ledoros. If you see the parallelism in the Megillah, what's the beginning of the Megillah? It's so interesting that there's this fight between Vashti and Achashverosh. And how does the first parak end? Liyot Ish, Kol Ish, Tzorer Reveito, Umedaber Klishon Amo. What's the big deal that Achashverosh gets so upset about? He wants to tell his wife what to do, that she should listen to me because I said so. And at the end, we see that Esther says, Tichtavuni ledoros. But Tichtov Esther, that she takes the initiative because she feels like Mordechai has given her this opportunity to be who she really wants to be. And then we know that LaYehudim Haisa Ora V'Simcha V'Sasan V'Ikar, the happiness, the simcha that occurs on Purim is when Esther and Mordechai defeat Haman. Not just Mordechai. It's Esther that's the one that goes to Achashverosh and says, we need to fight another day, because she understands the practicality of the nature of the beast. That's our avodah, to bring our own Esther out of hiding. Each and every person should feel like their mission in life is to bring their Esther, by kasher haita ba'amna ito. Just like they had a moon, one and the other, they had belief in one another. Let's start tonight believing in our spouses. Let's start forgetting about all the shtuyot that they do, all of the katnut, all of the kitrugim, all of the small-mindedness. Let's commit tonight on Tanis Esther to believing 100% in our wives, that they are the most amazing creatures in this world, and there isn't anybody else in the world that we're supposed to be looking at other than them. And our entire focus is to open up that lock and to bring them out of hiding. And on Purim, when we're happy and we're feeling the push of the wine and the seuda, and we're feeling, wow, Hashem, I want to be close to you. And the next moment, we should say, let me be close to my wife. Everyone should shout that they want to be close to their spouse on Purim, that they want to allow their wife to feel comfortable, so that women don't feel that Purim is a burden. Lo aleinu, where have we come to? We can do this. Since Beheseg Yad, v'nafochu mamash, in a shnia, in 1 second it can all change. It's up to us to be willing to take on the responsibility. Rav Eli said, tomorrow is Tanis Esther. Tomorrow is a fast day. On a fast day, the point of the fast is tshuva. The point of the fast is connecting to Hashem. Each person tomorrow, take some time out, some personal time, and think to yourself, oh, where do I not believe in my wife? What do I need to give for that I'm not giving yet? How can I do tshuva about the times when I haven't believed in her? When I haven't given her my emun? When I haven't given her my love? How can I help her come out of her hiding place? That's the sort of Purim. Good day, my Sarah.